WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and boy, oh boy, do we have a doozy of a show. Now, later on in the hour, I'll be chatting with Al Manfroni, who is the head coach of the Michigan State club football team. Al and his squad are off to one impressive start. They stay undefeated with a win this past weekend over WSU, Wright State University. Al will be joining me via phone to talk about how his team has been able to pull it together and remain undefeated on the year. An incredible squad with an incredible story. You do not want to miss that. We will also get you locked and loaded for the start of the NBA season. The Detroit Pistons open their year tonight against the Atlanta Hawks on the road. We will give you a bit of a preview on that squad, on the red, white, and royal blue, as I like to call them. Also, Greg Hardy and that whole sideshow that took place this past weekend with the Dallas Cowboys as they took on the New York Giants. You'll get to hear what Greg Hardy had to say, or didn't have to say, after that game. Also, the Detroit Lions making some moves, and they have decided to fire Joe Lombardi as their head offensive coordinator. As you see, so much to get to, so little time. So, hey, folks, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Tuesday, October 27th. All right, we start with the Detroit Pistons. They have fired offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi and offensive line coaches Jeremiah Washburn and Terry Heffernan hours before the team was scheduled to leave for London. Now, the Lions promoted 31-year-old quarterbacks coach Jim Bob Cooter to offensive coordinator. Now, Cooter will call plays, and he anticipates there will be some scheme changes. We'll continue that chat in just a sec. The 59th season of the NBA presence in the D, beginning when the Pistons moved from Fort Wayne for the 1957-58 year, tips off tonight at 7:30 p.m. versus the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta at Phillips Arena. The Hawks are coming off a 60-win year and play much like the Pistons, with a post-offense frequency which ranked near the bottom of the league last year, and shooters spread around the floor. The Pistons are coming off a 32-win year and trying to break a six-year non-playoff streak, longest in the Eastern Conference and third longest in the league.
And here's a knockaway by Jennings to Andre. Back to Brandon.
Yeah, hopefully we hear a lot of that this year, right? All right, an attorney for former Michigan State University basketball star Mateen Cleaves said he's very disturbed that news of a criminal investigation in Genesee County involving Cleaves has been made public. Cleaves has not been charged, nor have any details of any allegations been released, noted Frank Manley, a longtime Flint attorney. He was responding to published media reports this past weekend that the review of an investigation involving Cleaves was transferred from the Genesee County Prosecutor's Office to the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. Interesting story there. Jim Harbaugh has always been uber competitive, and he is trying to instill that into his own kids, even with the Halloween season this week. Quote, I've been trying to advise them to get two costumes, to be go-getters. You can hit the neighborhood in one costume. Better to jog or run from house to house. Then you can get more candy than anybody else. Then come home, make a quick change into a second costume, and hit those same houses again. I love it, Jim Harbaugh. Not surprisingly, he's speaking from experience. Quote, I did. Constant hustle, hustling at all times. How can you not like Jim Harbaugh? All right. Torrey Hunter, a five-time All-Star, announced his retirement after 19 Major League seasons. Hunter broke in the majors as a center fielder in 1997 with the Minnesota Twins, where he spent 12 of his 19 years. He ended his career Monday where it began. Hunter, who was 40 years old, batted 277 and won 9 gold gloves during his career. He also played for the Los Angeles Angels and the Detroit Tigers. Our Top 5 Tuesday is centered around the retirement of Torii Hunter, and we'll bring you the top 5 moments of Torii Hunter's career. The 2015 World Series starts tonight in Kansas City as the Royals host the New York Mets in Game 1 of the Fall Classic. The American League earned home field advantage by winning the All-Star Game, which means the Royals will get 4 home games if the series goes to a full 7. The series will feature a 2-3-2 format, with the first 2 games being played at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. The Baltimore Ravens fell to the Arizona Cardinals last night, 26-18 on Monday Night Football. Chris Johnson, he rushed for 122 yards, 62 on a play where he rolled over the belly of a defender and kept on running. And the Cards barely held off a late rally to beat the Ravens.
From the 30, Chris Johnson comes to the left. Jermaine Gresham blocking again. Johnson may not have been down. He was not. Stays alive. And Johnson takes it inside the 10 to the 8-yard line.
Yeah, how crazy was that play, right? According to the police, last but not least, our last headline here, according to the police, former Washington Wizard Glenn Rice Jr. was shot in the leg after getting into an argument at an Atlanta restaurant. After the shooting, he was arrested and charged with possession of marijuana. After police say they found a bag containing 240 grams of weed and Rice Jr.'s passport near the scene. The police report states that Rice Jr. and 5 or 6 other men were involved in an argument at Scales 925, a restaurant owned by rapper T.I. The men were asked to leave the restaurant by the staff, according to the report, at which that point, the argument continued in the parking lot, and Rice Jr. got into a physical altercation with an unidentified man. The man Rice Jr. was fighting with eventually pulled out a gun and shot Rice Jr. in the leg before fleeing the scene. Yeah, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
Question. No comment. Next question. Any other questions? No comment. Next question. Any other questions? No comment. 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 Any other questions? Thank you guys for coming. I appreciate y'all very much.
You don't want to answer questions, you don't want to answer questions. But this is the same guy who, when things are going well, loves being in the center of the media, loves creating a little fictitious secondary character for himself and all that kind of stuff. He's a fraud. I mean, he's an absolute fraud. Greg Hardy is a fraud. He's a great player, but the next time he doesn't want to answer a question, he can just say, guys, I don't want to talk today. You don't have to do that. Now, you can do that if you want to amuse yourself by doing that. And if some people find it funny, that's fine. But this is the same guy who, when he's in a good mood and he feels like creating an alter ego for himself and all that kind of stuff, he's the first guy to look for.
Listen, I agree.
I mean, no one should be surprised, I suppose.
I don't think many people really look at him off the field and say, oh, yeah, there's a guy I want to be like.
Man, is it tough, just ridiculously frustrating being a Dallas Cowboys fan. Coupled with the fact that I am from Detroit, the west side of Detroit, grew up having to, of course, be a Detroit Lions guy as well. Gosh, 4 straight losses for the Dallas Cowboys. The Detroit Lions have only won 1 game this season. We all know how atrocious things have been in that franchise, and I just noted, of course, the fires that occurred from the team yesterday afternoon. We'll get to that in just a sec. But I wanted to play that snippet to start today's show because this whole situation with Greg Hardy has clearly gotten out of hand. Absolutely ridiculous. Greg Hardy is a man who has certainly been in trouble with the law, and so much so it forced him to initially be suspended 10 games to start this year's season, but that suspension was reduced to 4, and he was able to come back a bit early. And the situation occurred with him and his, I believe it's his then girlfriend or fiance, not sure what exactly which one it was, but they got into an argument that led to him throwing her on a futon filled with guns. I kid you not, folks. I kid you not. And when I first heard the story, I mean, and how many times have we heard about NFL players getting in trouble with the law, more so specifically when it comes to domestic violence situations? So when I first heard about this story, one of the first questions that came to mind was, why in the world would you have live ammunition just on your futon in the first place? And secondly, why in the world would you throw a young woman onto that ammunition? And Greg Hardy is a guy who just never ceases to amaze you because he's just a guy who just doesn't get it. Just doesn't get it. And just to show you how crazy sports are sometimes, folks, sometimes it doesn't matter what an individual does, how many times that individual gets in trouble with the law away from their respective sport. At the end of the day, some GMs, some owners, heck, even some coaches don't care and will enable those actions just to give their respective squad a better chance at winning a ball game. That's just how it is. There's no question that Greg Hardy is one of the best defensive players in the NFL. He is a monster. He is a freak of nature. One of the best out there, folks. But at the same time, when it comes to what the man has done off the field, it blows my mind how he is even playing football right now. I just don't understand it. And HBO's Real Sports, they had a documentary, which I was, of course, glued to my television about, seeing as though I am a big Dallas Cowboys fan. They actually profiled the one, the only Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, whose hustle I certainly admire. I will say that Jerry Jones, when he first bought the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, he bought the franchise for what? I think it was like $185 million at the time. And it's so crazy because he wanted to buy the franchise as soon as after he got done with his college career. But that fell through because of some iffy things going on, and he actually was going to take out a loan. But I forget the mobster's name at the time. But he was going to take out a loan from some mobster. I'm glad that didn't happen, right? Or else he would not have been the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. But you know, he went into the gas and oil business, grinded his way through that, and was able to become a pretty profitable dude. So once he stacked up that dollar, he decided, you know what, I'm going to fulfill that dream of buying the Dallas Cowboys. And again, what, $185 million, he has now transformed that franchise into one of the most profitable in the entire world, let alone American sports, folks. It's a multi-billion dollar franchise. He's even building, you know, we talk about Jerry World and that stadium, that state-of-the-art stadium that can compete with any athletic venue. He's also building a mini city here, folks, in which, you know, the Dallas Cowboys will practice there. They will train there. There will be hotels and restaurants in the area. I think 6 high schools in Texas will be able to play games there as well. I mean, it's absolutely mind-blowing when they showed the digitized makeup of how this thing is supposed to look when it's said and done. But Jerry Jones, at the end of the day, even though this is a multi-million, you know, billion, I should say, you know, dollar industry with the Cowboys, franchise with the Cowboys, at the end of the day, Jerry Jones wants to win. In the 90s, the Cowboys were a staple in the NFL, and they have yet to sniff a Super Bowl since the 90s, folks. So it's all about winning with Jerry, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to win, even if that means signing on a headache like Greg Hardy. a guy who has had a glaring off-the-field problem, domestic violence problem, like that one that I just stated, and you still put him on the franchise. And, you know, Real Sports asked him, I mean, why sign Greg Hardy? Why? What made you sign this guy? And Jerry, you know, he didn't even sound believable when he said it. He looks at the guy, he looks at the camera and says, you know what, we did extensive research, and we believe that that's now in his past. He's never been convicted. He's never been behind bars for it. We're moving on from it. And it was almost comical when he said it. I'm sitting there like, really, Jerry? Really? Why don't you just come out and say, hey, you want to win? You want to win, and you're willing to do whatever it takes, even if that means signing a knucklehead like Greg Hardy to do it. And I knew at one point in this year, once Greg Hardy hit the gridiron, I knew that the balloon had to pop sooner or later. And that's exactly what happened this past Sunday on the sidelines as the Cowboys fell to the New York Giants. There is video clearly showing Greg Hardy getting into it with one of the special teams coaches, Greg Hardy slapping down the playboard as it falls to the grass, him getting into a shoving match with that coach, with other teammates, and then video of also him getting into it with arguably your best player on the sidelines and wide receiver Dez Bryant. And to pile on that ridiculousness, he goes into the locker room and decides to pull off a Marshawn Lynch, like you just heard. At least Marshawn would let you get a question off before he said next question or no comment. I mean, even before the reporter even finished the question, he's like, no comment. I mean, just ridiculous. And then what does Jerry Jones and head coach Jason Garrett do? Heck, I even saw an article today. Jerry Jones is already talking about a contract extension for Greg Hardy. Jason Garrett decides to come to the side of Greg Hardy and says, hey, at times it gets heated on the sidelines. He's just trying to motivate his players. Are you kidding me? And I have to agree. You know, that's why I had to, you know, compile that bite with the very poetic words of Mike Greenberg, of Mike and Mike on ESPN, and how he talked about how Greg Hardy is just a joke. Really, just a joke, to paraphrase the man, just a joke. And, you know, it's so funny because Greg Hardy is a guy who definitely is, if everything is going good, he loves that media attention. He loves it. He embraces it. It adds to his overall brand. But if something iffy happens, if something goes against the grain that does not make him look good, that does not make Greg Hardy look like Superman, he crawls up into a ball and he acts like a child. And that's exactly what we saw this past weekend. I don't know. Greg Hardy, he's just, if you're looking at the prime example of having a quote-unquote superstar be enabled and not judged to the standards of how every player should be judged, no matter what sport they play or no matter how good they are, you look at Greg Hardy. I just had to get it off my chest. I wanted to do it yesterday. We ran out of time. We had a jam-packed show, so I had to start off my show with getting that off my chest. So let me take a deep breath, and let's move on. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, happy, happy Tuesday. How are you doing?
Ow, it's Christmas, right? Or no, Mardi Gras. maybe my birthday? No, it's something big today, though.
You can equate it to that. It's a big day.
Quite the magnitude. But no, it is NBA opening night. Al, you and I have been looking forward to this since Summer League. Summer League.
Right.
I mean, we've been bereft of NBA basketball since May, Summer League since July, and it's back finally. My Pelicans are playing tonight. Your Pistons are playing. It's going to be one fantastic night. I can't wait to get back on the court. And you're right. I mean, you can equate this to birthdays, Christmas, anything you want, because this is one of my favorite nights of the year. I love NBA opening night. Once you get 41 games into the regular season, yeah, maybe the appeal and allure starts to dwindle for some. But opening night, there's nothing better than knowing you've got sports tonight every single night. every day after work, you've got NBA to go home and watch. There's nothing better.
I can hear you your excitement just bleeding through right now, Isaac. And yeah, this is big because I'm a big NBA guy. I am a big NBA guy. And you guys know my fandom that I have for the Dallas Cowboys, but even that eclipses that. The Detroit Pistons are my favorite franchise. I've grown up a Piston fan. I always joke and say I popped out the womb with an Isaiah Thomas jersey on. I'm a huge Pistons fan, folks. And I'm looking forward to the year. So, yeah, later on in the hour, we're actually going to give a season preview for the Pistons. And we're going to give some predictions on the year, some overall predictions when looking at the entire league. So it should be fun. But it is good to have the NBA back. I'm actually doing two NBA fantasy basketball leagues. I missed my first draft that I had on Saturday because I was out covering the MSU and Indiana game. But I was able to sit down and be glued to my laptop for my second draft that took place Sunday. I was watching NFL football. So exciting stuff, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, without a doubt, Al. But to quickly touch back on that Greg Hardy incident as well, I'm not a mind reader. I'm not some sort of mentalist from Fox TV. But I think I can tell you why Jerry Jones signed Greg Hardy. And that's because the last time he played a full season, he had 15 sacks. He was a Pro Bowler. He was one of the most dominant defensive ends in the league. So, you know, when somebody's that good, who cares about their personal record when it comes to football? Now, all the fans do. Everybody involved with the player does. But the owners, no. They definitely do not. It's about football, and that's it. Yeah, maybe he lost a couple of million because his off-the-field actions. But when it comes to the end of the day, he's going to get a fat new contract after this one as well because he is so talented. It's a shame to see him use all that strength, all that speed off the field to hurt other people. When you look at really the atrocity that is the domestic violence case leveled against him, that surpasses Ray Rice's. Ray Rice's had this shock effect because it was on camera. It was a cold cocked punch right to the face that was clear as day. Greg Hardy's, we didn't see that. We did not see the actual incident, but from all the descriptions, that's worse. He had his hands around her neck, leaving visible marks. Mm-hmm. That is much more upsetting to me than a simple punch. Neither should be encouraged in any situation. But this is more life-threatening. And this is scary that this man only got a 4-game suspension and he's back to his old tricks.
Yeah, it really blows my mind. And again, yeah, to equate it to the Ray Rice situation, the reason why Ray Rice was, why that situation was blowing up so much is because you could visually see it. And also, you know, with this old Greg Hardy situation, when this thing went to court, the individual, the woman who said that Greg did this, she didn't show up. She didn't show up to her court date. So it got thrown out. He was never convicted. No legal actions or legal ramifications, came upon Greg Hardy. And, hey, he went on with his life. So that's the difference. That's the difference right there. But, man, I just hate it when athletes, you know, they give you that Marshawn Lynch crap in the locker room. They don't know how to conduct themselves professionally because they're sour about something that happened during the game. At the end of the day, you are a professional. It is in your contract. In order for you to get paid, you have to adhere to media obligations because at the end of the day, those individuals have a job to do as well.
You get fined if you don't go to media day.
Exactly. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's come out, but I'm pretty sure Greg Hardy, he has to be fined for the crap that he pulled on Sunday. He has to. He didn't give the media anything. Didn't even let the media talk. I mean, it's ridiculous, man. Again, our phone lines are open, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Moving along here, some breaking news occurred yesterday afternoon that had many Lions fans smiling. I will be honest with you guys. It had me smiling, too, because I thought it was just a matter of time before this move had to happen. The Detroit Lions, they fired offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi and offensive line coaches Jeremiah Washburn and Terry Heffernan. Is that Heffer? Heffernan. There we go. Heffernan, excuse me.
Let's just say Hugh Heffernan called it.
Yeah. I want to get it right, though. Terry Heffernan, hours before the team was scheduled to leave for London. Now, the Lions promoted 31-year-old quarterbacks coach Jim Bob Cooter to offensive coordinator. Cooter will call plays, and he anticipates there will be some scheme changes. So this was long overdue because looking at how the Lions have played this year, much of the blame has to be on the shoulders of Joe Lombardi. I went on a rant earlier this year when looking at how you have so many weapons. You have Golden Tate. You have Calvin Johnson. You have Amir Abdullah. You have Eric Ebron. You have Brandon Pettigrew. You have Matthew Stafford. You have all of these weapons offensively, weapons that I do believe were, if we're in the hand of someone else, we could be talking about playoffs maybe here. You have all of these weapons, and yet this offense continually, on a week-by-week basis, underperforms, cannot get into any sort of a lather or groove. You fail to utilize arguably the best wide receiver in the game in Calvin Megatron Johnson. At the beginning of the year, we saw Megatron targeted, you know, on an average of 3 to 4 times. I just think it's absolutely inexcusable, and it was just a matter of time before Joe Lombardi got that pink slip. And it was no surprise for me. And it's so funny because there were two press conferences that occurred out of the Detroit Lions camp yesterday. The first one was the usual weekly press conference in which head coach Jim Caldwell addresses the media and sort of talks about their upcoming matchup. Now, again, they are in London this week. Literally hours after that, hours after Jim Caldwell was asked the question, do you think there will be any personnel changes to the coaches on your squad today? He said, no, I don't anticipate that. Hours after he says that, a breaking press conference occurs in which all of that goes out the window. Detroit Lions, fire. Offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi. All of that goes out the window, folks. And it's interesting to see, to watch that presser as Caldwell mentioned how this is a sad day. This is a sad day. And it makes me, you know, wonder. And this is just my theory on it. I think Caldwell got pressure from the upper echelons of the Detroit Lions. And that was their move. That wasn't Caldwell's move. If Caldwell had the end-all, be-all to this decision, Joe Lombardi would still be the offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions going to London. That's just plain and simple. He mentioned how it was a sad day. He mentioned, you know, before the fires took place, how he didn't anticipate them to take place. This was a higher up move, and this is a move that had to happen. Now the question that is on my mind now, when looking at how sporadic this took place and looking at the demeanor of Jim Caldwell in both of those pressers before and after the news was released about these firings, I wonder how hot that seat is when it comes to Jim Caldwell. What do you think, Isaac?
Whew, it's smoking. Because I can tell you, this was without a doubt, a coach does not go to a podium and say, there aren't going to be any significant changes, not any that I anticipate. No coach says that when there are changes right around the corner. He'll either circuitously go around that question, or he'll say, I'd rather not comment on that. That's what he'll say. That's the professional way to handle that. That right. means this was an executive move over his head. Who knows? The question might have been the impetus for this move. Like, dang, maybe we do need to make a personal change. But anyway, Martin Mayhew, Lions execs, all of them, I do think they got this one right. So although Jim Caldwell's yeah. seat is hot, this was a move that needed to be made. Now, I think there should have been maybe a little bit more communication between the head coach and the higher-ups. But at the same time, no, this is long overdue. Like you said, the sporadic, erratic, inconsistent play calling of the Detroit Lions this year is one primary reason for their downfall.
Right.
Calvin Johnson's limited targets in the first two games of the season, and then total reliance on the pass with the absolute shunning of the run game. It just makes no sense. It makes it so predictable for a defense. And it's a large reason that the Detroit Lions are sitting with one win right now. So, yeah, maybe inform Caldwell, because that seat's hot, too. If
yeah,
he doesn't turn
right.
this around with a new offensive coordinator, then you've got to cut off the head of the snake.
I
That's
agree.
Jim Caldwell.
Yeah.
But for
yeah.
now, good move by the Lions execs.
Yeah, I really think it was a move probably from Martin Mayhew. I think that's what it was. He's getting pressure from all different areas, more so specifically the fan base of the Detroit Lions, and he had to do something. He had to do something. I mean, this team is just atrocious right now. It is not fun each and every Sunday to sit down and watch the Detroit Lions because they are just bad. Just bad. So what do you think? Was this the right move, folks? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to remind you all that later on in the hour, folks, again, the Detroit Pistons, they open their season tonight on the road against the Atlanta Hawks. We will give you a Pistons season preview. You don't want to miss that. Also, former Detroit Tiger Torrey Hunter has announced his retirement. We will bring you the top five Torrey Hunter career memories for Top 5 Tuesday. All of that and so much more. But after this break, we will be chatting with Al Manfroni, MSU club football coach. His team currently sits at 3-0 on the year. You don't want to miss that or anything after that. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, we're taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I do believe we have a caller right now, or don't we? Isaac, I can't hear anything you are saying right now. Isaac's just mouthing right now.
We've got Al on right now, so actually just called in.
Al just called in, so we don't have a caller right now. We're just going to get to our guest for today. All right, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Michigan State club football continued its unbeaten streak on Sunday. Get this. In front of a nearly crowd of, 200 fans? 200 fans at Hope Sports Complex. Pretty cool stuff. The number 3 Spartans playing their final home game of the year. Cruise past the number 13 Wright State University Raiders, 43-6. To talk about it right now is the head coach of the Michigan State club football team, Al Manfroni. Al, thanks so much for joining me today, my man.
Hey, how are you, Al?
I'm doing fantastic. First off, Al, how does it feel to be 3-0 on the year? Not a blemish on that record. The fans are coming out and really hyped up about this squad. You got to be a happy man right now.
You know, I'll be honest. This is probably one of the greatest group of young men that I've ever worked with, and that says a lot because I've worked with some great teams in the past years and that. But these guys are just, they're so committed and they're so focused. I as a coach, you just can't ask for anything else.
Yeah, that is certainly true. And the way you guys have done it, I mean, and I'm going to dive in that more specifically right now. I mean, looking at your game this past weekend, Al, 43-6 win over Wright State University. Austin Cox really set the tone early with TDs of 10 and 35 yards in the first quarter. How big was that for you guys in the beginning to start that matchup?
Well, you know, that we came out a little flat right at the beginning, and we kind of, I don't know if we just weren't in it yet or what the mental thing was, but we came out a little flat and then we got the engine kind of revved up and going, and Cox did a great job. He's a great runner. He's a hard runner. And that's the other beautiful thing. You know, we've got a great crib of running backs that, you know, all do a phenomenal job. But he kind of got us set the tone, got us going. And from there, we kind of rolled from there.
Now, you know, looking at your team, Al, something that really stands out to me is, you know, the word depth. I mean, you guys have 57 active players and a really nice established coaching staff. I mean, how important is that? And how big of a key has that been for you guys as to a reason why you're still undefeated?
Well, when you have coaches that are seasoned, that know what they're doing, you know, we only have a few days of practice a week. We have no time to burn. We have no time to waste time. It's hard enough at any level. I don't care what it is. It's hard enough at any level to, you know, put together a group of guys that are from all over, never played with each other, have no idea about each other, put them all together, make them, you know, build them into a team, let them all play and gel together. That's hard enough. So when you have experienced coaches like we have, I have a great defensive coordinator, and Chris Pickney, he won the national championship last year. And as head coach at Oakland, and you know, he's with me this year as defensive coordinator, and you know, I can't even tell you, you know, the value that you have there from having experienced people. Our practices are very focused. They're very organized. You know, we don't waste a whole lot of time. I mean, there's something going on, you know, basically every 15 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, my offensive coordinator has been with me for a number of years. You know, he's a great guy. You know, he has the offense working real well, along with several other seasoned coaches, Coach Palmer and my other offensive quarterbacks and receivers coach. I couldn't ask for more. I just couldn't. I mean, you know, we all work well together, and it makes the difference.
Now, Al, you mentioned how you guys only have, a limited amount of time to prepare for that next matchup throughout the week. A couple practices and, of course, limited time at those practices. How do you make sure that you get the most out of those players during that time to make sure that attention is locked in and focused throughout that entire practice? Because that's got to be a challenge.
Well, I have one coach that breaks down game film, and he'll break down the game film, and he'll provide all of us with you know, the breakdown of the game film, not only from our game that we just finished playing, but also from the team that we're going to be playing them next week. We also post the game film from the team we're going to be playing, for an example, at University of Michigan this coming week. That film has already been posted. Now, what we do is we post it online on a private group type thing where the boys can access. It's not Huddle, but it's another private group situation where our guys can go on, they can review the game film, they can watch it, and then what we do is when they come to practice, we go through everything we're going to be doing for this next week. So there is some attention that they have to do on their own and watching these game films, because obviously we don't have the time to have them watching film.
So technology has really made your job a bit easier, right, Al?
Well, you know, it does. I mean, you know, I'll tell you, without it, you'd be lost.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, it gives us the ability to not waste any time. You know, and it's not like we have them 5 days a week, because we don't.
Exactly. Now, Al, you stressed coming into this past weekend's matchup against Wright State, you stressed special teams. And that's what I heard, you know, looking at your post-game quotes from
right.
that matchup.
Yep.
You worked on
sure
special
did.
Teams a lot last week. What improvements did you see this past weekend?
I'll tell you what, our special teams did phenomenal. I don't think they ever had, and I'd have to check the game report, but I don't believe they had any field position more than the 30.
Wow.
And we boxed them back. I mean, a couple of occasions we had them back inside the 5. Our special teams did a great job. We've got a phenomenal kicker. I mean, our kicker, you know, I mean, he puts them to the end zone almost every time. And, you know, our special teams that we put together, we ended up emphasizing, you know, how to play. I mean, before, in the past few weeks, we've had a real problem. Guys bunching up, guys not staying in their lanes, guy, you know, not protecting the sideline, that kind of thing. So we went through all basically all the basics, and we did not make those same mistakes. And it showed because they never broke off long runs, and we ended up keeping them boxed in, you know, on kickoffs. So. It worked really well. I mean, we ended up scoring a touchdown off of special teams. We, you know, we did well.
Now, Al, you have the University of Michigan Flint Kodiaks and then top-ranked Miami of Ohio Redhawks coming up. What are the strengths and the weaknesses of your squad right now?
If I have to, you know, if I have to look at strengths, you know, our strengths is our depth. We're deep. You know, like I mentioned earlier, we have a great corral of running backs and receivers. You know, we've done well. Vinny Costanzo, our starting quarterback, has done a great job this year. You know, we've been able to keep fresh legs in the game all the time. Same thing on our line. Our offensive line has just been getting better and better and better progressively. You know, out of any facet of the game, you know, your offensive line has to, you know, it has to flow, and they have to work together and they communicate in order to make plays work and work well. And, you know, communication and that has been a kind of a problem area for us on the line. But as time has gone on, they have definitely gelled and they've worked together and they've really started to come along, and it shows, i.e., you know, us being able to run the ball and run the ball really well, which we hadn't done in the first few games. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think that's been our biggest strengths is coming along, our special teams, as we noted. And then, you know, weaknesses. To be honest, I really don't see us having many weaknesses. The only thing I've seen for us is just you know, fixing the technical issues. Mm-hmm. We've got a tremendous defense that has been very begrudgingly given up points this year. They don't give up a ton of yardage. You know, our offense has been able to move the ball and move the ball well. We didn't run as well as we wanted to, but we now it seems like our running game has definitely picked up in the last two games. So, you know, I think it's just technical issues and tweaking our game a little bit. But other than that, in the stretch run here for the last two games, I emphasize every week to these guys, they have to get better every week. You know, we have to keep improving. So I'm hoping that by the time we get to Miami in 2 weeks, we'll be peaking and, we can work some magic there.
Yeah, it's all about the details, Al. And you know, I want you to briefly touch on, you know, with your home regular season being in the books now, I want you to touch on the support of the local community as well as the players for your team. Again, 57 active players and the dedication that they've shown throughout this season, having to balance so many things. I mean, you know, especially when it comes to a lot of them being students, yep. while also playing on your squad and the dedication that they've shown throughout this year.
Well, you know, we have, we definitely have had, that part of it has been a real pleasure as far as the students are concerned. You know, I emphasized for very early on that they are there for an education, that their focus must be their education, and they have to take that seriously. They're playing for the love of the game, but you know, their education had to come first. And we have guys that are, you know, in some very difficult majors and they're still doing very well in school. So, you know, that's a big plus. As far as the support, I can't say enough. I mean, we've had some tremendous support, you know, not just from parents and friends and that, but, you know, we've had people, some people from, you know, the university students and that have come over, watch games, and you know, the guys really notice it. They really do. And they really appreciate it. And that's been a big help, I'll tell you, because they, you know, they hear it. They can hear it, and it's kind of been that 12th man syndrome type thing. So we've really appreciated that, and you know, we hope to make it better and get better as you know the next season wears on for next year. You know, our focus right now is finishing up our season this year and you know, hopefully moving on to the playoffs in 3 weeks.
Right. Yeah, and we look forward to following you, Al. And again, the Spartans, folks, they will travel to the Northeast next Sunday, November 1st, to take on the University of Michigan Flint Kodiaks, who have not won a game since the 2013 year. The game will be played at 3:30 p.m. at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church in Burton, Michigan. That's this Sunday. The contest will set the stage for the Spartans' final regular season contest, a showdown with top-ranked Miami of Ohio, the Redhawks. Al, we wish you all the luck in the world, and we will certainly have you on the show to talk about those matchups in the future.
We appreciate it. We appreciate all your support, too. I mean, you know, it's been great, and you know, again, you know, we're trying to build on the tradition that MSU has, you know, the great football tradition that MSU has, and you know, to make the students and the university proud, you know, proud of us as well. And I think these boys have come a long way with that. So, you know, we do appreciate it.
Well, you guys have certainly done that and then some. Al Manfroni, the head coach of the Michigan State club football team. Al, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks so much.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will have a preview of the new year for the Detroit Pistons. My Pistons, oh man, I'm excited. Are you excited? I'm going crazy right now. Also, Top 5 Tuesday and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back. You are listening to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. That's right. Hoop season. You gotta love it. Later on, actually, right after I get off the air, in about 10 minutes, I got to head over to the Breslin Center, actually, speaking of hoop season, because the Michigan State men's basketball team is holding Media Day. Tom Izzo addresses the media at 2 p.m. At the podium, and he'll talk about and will give an extensive report on his team this year. And he will go player by player by player and talk about each player's strengths, weaknesses, blood type, religion. I mean, he'll talk about everything when it comes to those players. But before we get to our Pistons preview here, let's go to our phone lines right now. And I do believe we do have Martin on line one. Martin, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Al, man, what's going on, man? It's a great
day. Good,
basketball
homie.
Starting, bro.
Yeah, how exciting is that, dude? I mean, it's already here. Time is flying.
I know, man. I'm excited. I don't know if the Pistons are going to make the playoffs, but I do think they're going in the right direction. But I wanted to call about the Lions.
Yeah, go ahead. Sound off.
Because, you know, everybody wants to make a big deal. They fired Jim Bob Cooter. I mean, they fired Lombardi and the offensive line coach. But then when you look at the problem with the Lions, you look at teams like the Packers, look at teams like the Seahawks, look at teams like the Patriots. Like, you've just noticed they don't ever make, like, crazy big free agent signings. Like, they draft well. And they'll have fifth-round picks like Richard Sherman or undrafted free agents like James Jones who come in and like, play and are effective. And then you look at the game, like, look at the game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. He's Stephon Diggs, like a third-round pick, and he's a rookie, and he's going up against Darius Slay and Mathis, and he's cooking them. The problem is the general manager.
Right. I agree. Know? Yep.
That's the biggest problem with the team. So outside of that, you're just Band-Aids on a bullet hole. You know, it's like, yeah, sure, you fire your offensive line coach. You expect the three first-round picks that you took in the offensive line, the three early-round picks that you took in the offensive line the last 3 years to be better now. You know, like, do you expect Amir Abdullah to not drop the ball that now that Joe Lombardi's your offensive, not your offensive coordinator anymore? Like, I just don't – it seems to me to be real half-stepping.
I agree. Martin, I've been saying this for I don't know how long, even before the season even started. I mean, the problem with the Detroit Lions is, again, it starts at what you do in the NFL draft. And they have constantly ignored their needs coming into the draft for countless years. And it's all catching up with them. It happens every single season for this team. I always go back to the Eric Ebron pick. And then when they traded up to get Kyle Van Noy. I'm sitting there scratching my head and saying, what in the world are you doing? So I agree. We are on the same page there, Martin. And this is just a culmination of all of that idiocracy at the end of the day. We all knew that Joe Lombardi was not going to be the offensive coordinator next year. I guess Martin Mayhew looked at it and said, rather than sooner than later.
Well, yeah. So like you were saying earlier on 130 that, you know, you felt like it was a Caldwell thing. Like Caldwell kind of got the notice, like, hey, either fire somebody or you're going to get fired. I think it goes higher than that. I mean, when you just look at the production that you get out of the second and third round picks out of the Lions in the last 5 years.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And it's just like when you see other second and third round picks, or like you see other rookie running backs like Todd Gurley doing crazy stuff, and you could have had him. You could have had Odell Beckham. Instead, you have Eric Ebron. You know, you could have had Aaron Donald. Instead, you have Eric Ebron.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter who's coaching him.
Exactly.
It's who you got.
It doesn't, man. So I got to ask you, Martin, how hot do you think that seat is for Jim Caldwell? Do you think he'll be the coach next year?
See, it depends on really how they finish the year. I think if they continue going on the same track record, only win 3-4 games, then, yeah, Caldwell, he's probably gone, more than likely gone, unless you see, like, some type of offensive renaissance under Jim Bob Cooter. I don't know. Maybe that would be the case. But, like, I mean, this team wins less than 5 games. I don't see anybody coming back.
Right.
Because,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You got to think, at least since I've been in Detroit, firing the offensive coordinator, offensive line coach mid-season like this, only 7 games in, you know, obviously they're 1-6 and the season's over, but that doesn't seem like a very Lions-like move to me. So I think maybe with Martha Ford at the helm, things are actually kind of different around, I mean, but that's all speculation.
Right, it is all speculation, but at the same time, I do like this move and the fact that it has happened at this point in the season. We'll see. I agree with you. I think if the Lions do, quote-unquote, finish strong, maybe Caldwell keeps his job, but it's all up in the air right now. Martin, always a great call, dude. Appreciate it.
No, man, bro. I love the show, man.
Thank you, dude. Appreciate that, man. All right, well, 5 minutes left, Isaac. And again, I agree. I agree with Martin on this because this is a move that you and I have talked about this, Isaac. Looking at how this year has gone for Detroit, starting from game one, the play calling just has not been up to par and just has made me scratch my head multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, and so we all knew that Joe Lombardi, if he kept it up, he was treading on some thin ice, okay? And eventually, you know, I think this past week was really the straw that broke the camel's back where you had to make a move. If you don't, it's like, okay, you're basically just going to play out this season. You know that nothing is going to allude to success this year, and you're basically just tanking it. You're just going to play it out. That's it. But making this move is kind of showing that, okay, the Lions may have some sense of hope here. Maybe they can turn things around. They're at least going to go down kicking and screaming rather than just resting.
Exactly. And that's what should happen because Joe Lombardi, I agree with Martin. You can't blame all of it on him. There are so many systematic failures when it comes to the Lions. But, like you and I talked about for so long, you can blame the play calling on him. And he did not do that right whatsoever.
Not at all. All right. Well, 5 minutes left here, Isaac. The Pistons, they open their year tonight, 7:30. The Atlanta Hawks, this is my favorite sports franchise.
I'm giddy.
I love the Pistons, dude. And looking at what has occurred with this team throughout the offseason. We'll get to that, you know, right here just now. I mean, the Pistons last year, they had, what, a 32-50 record, a 32-50 record. They finished fifth place in the Central Division, missed the playoffs. They did win the eighth pick in the NBA draft lottery, in which, of course, they added small forward Stanley.
Man.
Yeah, you love, you're really high on Stanley Johnson. Stanley Johnson with the eighth overall pick. So I really like Stanley. From what I've seen in the preseason thus far, I really like what he can bring to the table. So Isaac, quick preview, man. What do you think? What do you think about this team?
You know, I think the Pistons will actually snag a playoff seed this year. I think it'll be the 8 seed in the East. I don't think they'll do anything spectacular. I don't think they'll do some shocking upset in the first round. In fact, I think they'll get swept by the Cavs in 4 games with a scoring margin of maybe 80 points. But the East is weak, and they will make the playoffs, I think. I think the offensive moves were for the better. Greg Monroe never really fit the mindset and the philosophy of Stan Van Gundy, a defensively strong player or someone who could stretch the floor. Ersan Ilyasova does. That was a good pickup. Crazy about Stanley Johnson. He'll start before the season's over. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, I expect him to have a big year and a big game tonight against the Hawks, considering the fact that Damari Carroll is no longer on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd expect, hey, this is the year we see whether Reggie Jackson really deserved that contract. So he'll be a big part of the Pistons' success this year.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go higher than the eighth seed in the East. I think the Pistons are going to be better than that. And we all know how bad the Eastern Conference of the NBA is. It is horrid. I mean, very, very bad. I think the Pistons may be a 4 or 5 seed in the East this year. In free agency, Detroit made 2 big splashes. Again, as you just mentioned, Isaac, re-signing point guard Reggie Jackson to a massive 5-year deal in hopes that he can be the floor general of the future for this squad. Secondly, the Pistons parted ways with, again, Greg Monroe after the negotiation saga from the summer of 2014. Also, Monroe, productive NBA player. It was a move that was smart for both parties involved.
Agreed.
I really thought, in terms of fit and financial situations. Detroit also added former San Antonio Spurs center Aaron Baines on a 3-year, $19.5 million contract in free agency. I really like Stanley Johnson. I really like KCP. I love the coaching. I mean, Stan Van Gundy, I mean, he's a proven winner in this league. Andre Drummond, again, one of the best big men in the league. I just think that core right there alone. I mean, KCP, Johnson, Drummond. You're bringing Ersan Ilyasova as well to add some depth down there to play along with Drummond.
And Marcus Morris is a good pickup as well.
Exactly. I like this team from head to almost toe. And I think that they will compete with any NBA team every single night. And looking at how the East is so bad right now, it opens that door for Detroit to make some noise. Now, when they do make the playoffs, I do think they make the playoffs. I think they only go... I don't even know if they get out the first round, let alone second round, but I do think they do make it, though. I do think they make it.
Okay, I just think the 4 or 5 seed might be a little bit high. Washington, Toronto, Cleveland, Miami, Chicago. That's 5
Miami,
right there.
Miami,
and Milwaukee.
I'm not big on Miami this year.
Miami, you and I are going to have to talk tomorrow.
We're going
to
break this. I'm not big on Miami this year. Milwaukee, still a young team with a lot of talent, though. It's always about – we've seen teams with a lot of talent not harbor that talent as well. That comes down to coaching as well. We'll get to that tomorrow, though. I think the Pistons do make the playoffs this year, though. Please don't let me down, Pistons. Please don't let me down. Thanks so much, all of you out there, for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.